Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sherry, who is with us this afternoon to talk about the Enneagram. Thanks for being with us, Sherry.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So a couple of things had me think of it. One was I'm really excited about the upcoming email class about on the Enneagram. I can't remember exactly what it was. I was trying to think about it this afternoon, but there was something that reminded me of how widespread open air has become and how there are people listening to the show all over the world who we don't even have any idea that they're out there listening, participating in practice.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
I thought, well, you know, a lot of those folks may have no exposure at all to the Enneagram and not realize the opportunity that's coming up. So I thought it would be really fun to talk about it and talk about the spiritual benefits of it.
Good. Yes. I'd love to. It's one of my favorite topics, as a matter of fact, because I feel like, I know there are a lot of people who benefit from the wisdom of the Enneagram, but I want to talk about it from the perspective that we approach it, which is the way we approach everything as an opportunity to wake up and end suffering, to see karma for what it is and make a choice to go beyond that. So often, I just had a conversation recently with June, who does these email classes with me, and she's actually quite an expert in the Enneagram at this point. And I was saying, you know, something that troubles me is how often I hear people say something like, well, you know, I'm a seven. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of it.
Right.
You know, from that, we're just all supposed to all.
Okay, well, no wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, well, does that explain a lot. And Jane was saying, and that is certainly not the intention of the Enneagram.
Right.
Yes, it is used like that, but everything is used like that if egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is what's using it. So we want to use it as a way to say, all right, now this is one of the ways, the tools that I can use to understand the karmic predispositions that I arrived in this life with. And it can help me see how I will react to things if I'm not paying attention. But if I am paying attention, then I can say, oh, well, yes, as a my kind of knee-jerk karmic reaction would be to, and then I can look at the possibilities that are available to me when I don't choose that.
Yeah, which is what I hear the class is essentially going to be focusing on.
Yes, yes. So with the Enneagram, there's what we call the Enneatype. So it's again, that kind of the survival system that I cobbled together to make it through this incarnation. And then we'll often hear people talk about where we go in comfort or security and where we go under stress. Or Mario talks about it as the ignored the ignored strategy, or the kind of the habitual strategy, the the under stress strategy, or the ignored strategy. And so when we look at it in that way, so I can see what I do if I'm just going around the world, kind of my knee jerk orientation. I can see what happens to me when under pressure, and I will tend to go to the worst traits of another type, that every type goes to another type in stress or in comfort. So I look at that and I can recognize as soon as I'm under pressure, then all of these behaviors begin to manifest, and they seem to make perfect sense to me, because who wouldn't react that way under these circumstances? But I can also look at the underutilized strategy that's available to me. And that's where I go to the very best qualities, the healthy qualities of another type, and I can choose to embody those as a way of going beyond both my habitual type and the places that I go under stress. So that's what we're going to be looking at, how to recognize those three points primarily, and then how to begin to choose through conscious compassion or awareness the strategy that will most effectively take me beyond the habitual karma.
So, you know, what, as you're laying it out, what reminds me is so helpful about the Enneagram, at least for me, is that it pops things out into relief that would otherwise just be the water that I swim in.
Yes.
So,
yes.
One of the things that's so helpful about it is that there are only nine types. So,
right.
You know, I mean, in Sangha, there's going to be a ton of overlap. So I'm going to hear a lot of people talk about exactly the same thing that goes on with me. So that's really helpful. But it's
yes.
also helpful that then someone who's a different type than me talks about their the karma that's there for them in a completely different way, and that also helps mine come into relief. Oh, wow, okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yes. So if it's something that's dramatically opposed to how you are, it can be shocking.
Yeah.
And shocking to realize that the same thing is going on with them on a process level that's going on with me. It's just that the content is really different.
Exactly.
And we're not striving to figure out which one is the right one, you know, which, again, karmic conditioning is very into helping us attempt to do unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
But instead, to just realize that there are all of these different orientations, and they can help us, they can be a mirror for us to see where we get stuck and to get some tools to move beyond it.
Yeah, and that piece, I mean, as you were walking through, the one that I know the best is the Enneatype 1. So under stress, we'll go to like a 4, sort of, oh, it's all about me and this is terrible and all of that. But then in the comfort, I think, goes to 7, which is a very sort of what?
Upbeat, optimistic.
Yeah, lots of possibility and lots of ideas and that sort of thing. And so it sounds like from what you're saying, it's not that, you know, in the class we're going to go to, okay, what's the way I really want to be and the fun, good way to be, but more just using those different points to highlight, A, at base, I am not any of that. And that there are particular ways that conditioning will attempt to trap each of us, and there are particular portals that will be effective for each of us in being free of that.
Yes, and one of the things that people hear us talk about a lot is there's not a change in consciousness without a change in behavior.
Yeah.
So in a way, we can use that undeveloped or unutilized strategy to make a different choice.
Yeah.
So if my choice is to be passive and kind of hide out, and the opposite of that, the underutilized strategy, is to express what's going on with me, then instead of just going with what is habitually comfortably uncomfortable, right? So it's familiar, but usually when we're in our unredeemed aspect of our personalities, we don't get a lot of accolades for that, right? So we recognize it's familiar, but it's certainly not working, not helping me with a life that's fulfilling. So I'm going to try these other behaviors. And in trying those other behaviors, and whether we're using the Enneagram or any of the various things that we use in practice to be able to look at this, anytime I'm choosing a behavior that's different from the karmic behaviors that I'm used to, I am reinforcing that change in consciousness, because I can only do that sort of thing from a different place of awareness than I do the habitual behaviors.
And what I just saw that something like the Enneagram could be so helpful with, and what you're saying is that, I mean, it's so unfamiliar to us that some of the things that will be most helpful as change in behaviors would never occur to us because they're not
right.
they're not going to arise in
no.
the when there's just that field of karma.
Even though it's very likely people have pointed out the possibility
exactly.
for any number of times in our lives, but we just thought they were wrong or crazy, whatever we write people off as who
exactly.
are attempting to help us go beyond our karma.
Or we just don't hear it.
Or we just
it's
don't
just,
hear it.
It's
right.
just not, it's not there. It's not on our radar.
Yeah.
And so then the Enneagram can be a good way of pointing us at direct things that just we just would never think of otherwise. We would never look
yes.
for.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And anything, again, anything that helps us see ourselves a little clearer
yeah.
is a benefit.
Yeah.
So rather than saying, well, you know, that's not in keeping with that, it's just like good Buddhist practice. Well, what the heck? You know, do anything that's going to help you see where you're stuck.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've been doing everything for the last little while with resistance. And one of the things that can be highlighted in looking at the Enneagram is resistance. So a lot of people will report, you know, it's you take a test to see what type you are. And people will report that the only way they knew I'm a X is because everything in me was screaming, no, I'm not, no, I'm not, no, I'm not. I'm not like that. And so after a while, you just go, okay, that must be me.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, and I love that the name of the class is the Enneagram, How the Types Resist and Embrace Practice.
Yes.
So
yes.
really pointing us to those, you know, what are the particular pitfalls and possibilities?
Yes, exactly. And well stated. Because every pitfall points us toward a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I can see that I'm stumbling over X, then I can learn not to step in that direction, and I can go in a different direction, and that is definitely helpful. Mm-hmm.
So the class is coming right up. I think it starts July 16th and goes.
I think that sounds right. Yeah. It's a month-long class. And, you know, it's how it always goes. I think there are 8 assignments, and we create a workshop in 8 assignments, and people write back in, and then they get a response to their to what they submit. And like that. It's fun practice. And as you indicated, it really is a marvelous thing for people who are at a distance. Now, of course, a ton of people who are close to home do it. Too, but if you're far away, it's a wonderful way to be with Sangha, and it's kind of like open air in that,
yep.
except that you're in a workshop with, you know, dozens if not hundreds of people, and so it's a great way to listen to, hear, see other people processing, and as you indicated early on, kind of see ourselves. Either in what people are saying or in resistance to what people are saying.
Yeah. We were recently in a group, I can't remember when it was, but talking about the power of when an email class is happening, that you can kind of feel the intensity of practice in the whole Sangha deeply.
Yes. Yeah.
And that everyone writing in and the very succinct things that people write in, and then that the guide responds to every single one. And so there's just such a wide array of practice points that are made in that we, you know,
yeah.
someone thinks to ask something in a way I never would have thought of it, but it's so helpful.
Yeah, hundreds of exchanges.
Yeah.
That we can participate in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, good. Thank you for this.
Thank you.
I hope everybody joins us.
Yep, yep. All right, well, we won't take up any more of the show, and Michael, we'll turn it over to you for the official start.
Hey,
okay,
Jen.
Great.
Yeah.
Michael, Jen, before we do that, I can't remember. Jen, maybe you can help me out here, or Michael. There were 3 points that I wanted to talk about on this show, and I can't remember which of them I talked about last week. But one is inviting people who are interested and able to write grants. To write a grant for us for the sustainability work that we're doing here at the monastery. Lots, and we've talked lots about it on Good News Update, but just so many exciting sustainability projects, and having some money for that would be a blessing, a boon. And then the next one was inviting people who find things in open air or in the Thursday night radio show that they find particularly helpful for their practice, if they would transcribe them and send those in to us, that would be great, because we would like to compile those and put them out in some form that reaches more people in the Sangha and beyond. And did I mention both of those on this show last week?
Mention what?
Did I mention both of those on this show last week?
Oh, I have a feeling that, did we, Michael? It wasn't the Thursday show?
Not on open air.
Yeah,
okay,
not
on open air. Okay, good, the Thursday night show.
Yeah.
And then the last one, did I talk about the Colorado cleanse on this show?
Again, I think it was only on Thursday night.
Oh, okay. All right. So, good. I want to suggest that. Again, there are a number of people in the Sangha who have done this particular cleanse, which we have, to a person, found extraordinarily transformative, actually. Very, very helpful in many ways, and a great care for the body. And since in our, what are we calling this year, Jen? What are we doing this year?
The cooperative of Sangha being lit up together, that one?
That's the one, and this first quarter is on the body and our relationship with the body. And so I have been just putting that out to people. If they are interested in it, they can let me know. And we're going to kind of form up some groups of people who will be going through it together and supporting one another and having a chance to use, as with the Enneagram, the cleanse as a way to just gain new insights and some disidentification from karma and all of those things that we're about.
You know, that's so neat, Sherry. I'll say one sentence about it, which I just saw when you said that, was that the Enneagram, the Colorado cleanse, the whatever it is, one of the things that's so helpful about having such a varied array of practice tools is that, at least for me, I start to realize, oh, I really am doing the same process everywhere. And the key to freedom is the same every time.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful to see that on the spiritual, emotional, physical, every level.
Yeah. That's well stated. Yeah, that's very good. That's very helpful. That is the benefit to all of this, because karmic conditioning would have us believe that it's just so endlessly varied and complex and confusing that certainly you should just give up. And the more we practice, the more we find that the answer is always the same.
It's getting simpler and simpler and simpler. Yep.
Simpler and simpler. All right. Thank you, Jen.
All right. Have a great show.
Thank you. Hey, Michael.
Hey there. Great
How
to
you?
Hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear yours.
Yeah, I've missed talking with you for a few weeks. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm very excited to be here and feeling supported by practice and plugged in. And now you're talking about even more practice tools. So that's fun.
There's just no end to the fun, is there?
There's no end to the support.
Mm-hmm. Life is good.
Yeah, and all we have to do is say yes and participate, and I want to be supported, and I want to support, and here I am.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's as simple as yes.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I've been listening to old archive shows, and about 10 years ago, you said, yes integrates, no separates.
Oh, it's another T-shirt bumper sticker moment, isn't it? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to revive that one, right? We'll use that somewhere. Thank you for that, Michael.
Sure. Yeah, the archives are just such a treasure trove of nuggets of wisdom. It's great.
Yeah, and, you know, that's back to my invitation for people. If they are people who transcribe things like that, those old shows are certainly It doesn't have to just be the new stuff, because there's a lot of places we've been in practice that we haven't talked about or thought about in years, and it's still good stuff.
Yes, yes, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some announcements here.
Okay.
As you just mentioned, Zen and the Enneagram class coming up in July, how the types embrace and resist practice.
Good.
And folks can sign up on the schedule page, schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no prerequisites for that, by the way. So
no.
Everybody's invited.
Yes, yes. We will endeavor to make it informative and of assistance to everybody. If they've never done awareness practice before, if they've never heard of the Enneagram before, we'll endeavor to bring it all together.
Great. Excellent. And the first week of June, enjoy the tranquility of the monastery at the Your Practice Retreat.
Ah.
Yes, as I did last summer.
Yes, it's good, isn't it?
It's great. And it's a unique retreat that you can tailor to fit whatever is most important for you in your practice right now.
Mm-hmm. With support, more of that support that you were just talking about.
Yes, yes, a ton of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's all at schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right. Thank you.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jim in Charlotte.
Well, hello, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. How's your post-retreat re-entry?
It is wonderful. There, gosh, I could say so much, but it's been nothing short of life-changing. It's been great. Of course, I have gotten put in the slammer a couple of times, but, you know, even that was... okay, because I was able to, I don't know, like, I guess the best way, like, when you were talking about the Enneagram, I've heard a lot about that, but I don't know anything about the Enneagram, and so I'm excited about that class, but one thing that dropped in when you were talking about that was just, I'm so thankful that I'm the prisoner, but also the prison keeper, I guess, in a way. Like, I don't know the ways that I'm not free, but all the keys are inside of me, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
So the times when I have been sort of put in the slammer or identified, I guess, luckily, I wasn't so identified that I wasn't able to say, huh, you know, let me think back to the lesson that we talked about and see what I can do to apply that and see if I can see anything that's going on.
So I realize I'm identified, and now I know I've got some tools. And, you know, Jim, the beauty of it is that as soon as I say, okay, I'm identified, and I know I've got tools, I'm already disidentified.
Yeah, yeah. And it's for me an icky, really icky feeling place to the extent to that, you know, conditioning. One thing... that came up for me a long time ago that was just like such a eye opener. I was identified and I was making up all these stories, and then I kind of came out of it and I saw a different perspective. It was making up all these bad stories about my boss, which of course conditioning loved. And then I was like, you know, we're the only two people that are in the same boat together. Like, we really need each other And then I was like, oh my gosh, when I'm identified, I can't believe any of the stuff that's going on in my own head. And not just conditioning doesn't just want me to believe it. It really wants me to dig my heels in and get really passionate about these stories that are going on there. And sometimes I've happened a couple times, but sometimes I just have to take it on faith that, all right, I really want to dig my heels in, but I know that I can't believe this thing that is going on in my head. And I just take it on faith, sort of, like, I guess.
Yes, that is perfectly stated. That's exactly it. Everything in me wants to believe that this is true and real and to get involved and, dig my heels in and just sink. And to trust, to take it on faith that that is made up. It's a made up reality that I have a habit of inhabiting. And it's made up and it's not true and it's going to pass and I need to turn my attention somewhere else. That's it exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
And the more we do that, the more obvious it becomes, because where we go when we turn our attention is so much better, happier, more pleasant, relaxing, whatever we want to, we step out of a hell state and into the present. It's a much better place to live. And we don't have to make that shift too many times before we realize, I don't want to live in that hell state. I want to drop it and get to a better place.
Yeah. It's so automatic. I guess that's where the practice comes in. Once I started seeing one of my patterns, I was like, oh my gosh, I go back to that every single time. It's almost like I really am conditioned. I'm not.
Yes. Yes. The word is well chosen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Programmed. Brainwashed.
Yeah.
So when I talk about automatons, that's it. It's just, there's that expression about your buttons, having your buttons pushed. And that's exactly what it's like. A button gets pushed and we just go unconscious and into this program. Yeah,
exactly. It's good to see. The last thing, I think I'm just about out of time. I want to hop off and give someone else a chance. But the last thing that I noticed recently that I just want to kind of look at is I still, sometimes we'll sense a lot of resistance and I'll say, okay, where's some self-hate here? Oh, there that is. And where's the fear here? And one of the things that seems to keep it in place is this, again, completely false idea that, that thing will be, I'm incompetent at doing that. That thing is hard. And Sherry, it can be like the silliest thing. Like today, I basically needed to make a phone call and I was resistant to it. I'm kind of embarrassed about this, but the phone was literally out of reach on the desk. And so I was like, oh, well, I can't make the phone call because the phone is, and it's embarrassing to talk about, but it's so common. Like, well,
yeah.
you can't do that. And it makes it seem like there's all these steps and it's really complex. And there's something else that it's just insipidly subtle. Like it'll get me before I ever even know it. Like it's just so subtle.
Shall I offer you a little practice tool to play with?
Please. Yeah.
Okay. So, if you picture in that situation that it's a little kid,
uh-huh.
which it is. Okay, it's a little kid. It's not a grown man sitting there at that desk, unable to figure out how to make it all the way over to that telephone. You know that only a little kid is going to fall for something like that, right? And so what you do when you – the next time that happens, you just – what were you called Jimmy when you were little?
Jimbo.
Jimbo, okay. So you could say, hey, Jimbo, let me – can I help you out here? Let's see if we can do this together. And you start talking about it, not even with an interest in making the phone call at this point, but just in helping him not be left in that abandoned place trying to do a grown-up job.
Oh, I love that. You know, the lady was talking about on another call the mentor helping her paint and stuff like that. And
That's it.
I was like, I'm not at that point because I don't understand quite what they're talking about. It wasn't self-hate. I was just like, you know, someday I'll get where I maybe understand that. But I get it now. That is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. And then you've disidentified. You're helping him. You got this little pal that you're now mentoring.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So as you play with it, you'll see how it's all the parts. So that's that young part of you. He's being mentored. You're getting a sense of what the mentor is. There will be times when you're identified with a young part of you, and that mentor will be there for you. And it's just this revolving kind of support system that's available to us.
And the thing that really strikes me about that is I get that incredible, beautiful feeling of being in a process of compassion. I get to experience that as the mentor helping the little kid, and the little kid gets to feel competent and helped, you know, getting the phone.
That's it.
Yeah, that's great.
That's it. It's what we all wanted when we were little, and most of us just didn't have. And now we get to do that, and we get to have that.
Wow, that's really helpful. That's very helpful. That's so helpful. Thank you so much.
Good. All right. Take good care, Jim. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to break for our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Hi.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Rochelle in Charlotte.
Hi.
Well, hello, Rochelle. How are you?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely hearing from Charlotte this evening, huh?
Yes. Hello to all the monks out there working hard at the monastery.
Listening in.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I attended the resistance retreat that you had here in North Carolina the other week. It was wonderful. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
And so came back home, and of course I hit a lot of resistance, but I've been playing my reassurances, and I'm actually reading the book now. It was waiting for me when I got home.
Good.
Yeah. Awesome retreat. I mean, really, I was just blown away by it. And so thank you very much.
Well, you're most welcome. It was a pleasure. It was a stunner, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was. Yeah. I was. Each day I kept thinking, so what are they going to do next? I mean, my God. You know, after the first day I was kind of like, my gosh, what else are we going to do? It's just, and then there was just more and more and very intense and packed and all excellent tools and direction for practice and things. So I'm very grateful.
Good, good. Me too.
I've been listening to the reports about the monastery and aquaponics projects y'all have there.
Uh-huh.
I've been particularly inspired by, I forgot his name, the expert y'all now have for the aquaponics.
Brian.
Brian. And a comment he made about being unconscious is ultimately unsustainable.
Yes.
And I really was impressed, and that kind of really hit home for me. I am in the process of doing a lot of things, but opening my own office, and it is not that I'm practice is everything. And so being conscious with all the decisions that I make to make sure that the practice is compassionate for the caretaker, the caregivers, for the patients and everything. And so that is one of the things I keep foremost in my mind. If it's unconscious, it's going to be unsustainable. And so trying to be conscious for each decision process along the way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job, isn't it?
It is a full-time job. But you know what? It's as stressful as the process is, it doesn't feel that stressful. When you take it moment by moment and decision by decision, instead of worrying about past stuff, or instead of really reaching for some specific plan of how it has to be, when you kind of let it go and say, well, I don't know how this is going to work, but this seems to be the best course of action, it's a lot less stressful.
If all we're doing is focusing on showing up to let life guide us in the way of sustainability, in that, you know, to be conscious in each moment of life, and as you say, it's not nearly as stressful as being unconscious.
It's not, and
it occupies us fully.
Yeah, yeah, and then you're delighted with the process, and it's like, wow, look what happened.
Yeah.
Now this is great. One thing that has inspired me is that I now have a flower pot garden on my patio, and when I left for the room, I had little tomato flowers, and when I came back, I had like 10 little tomatoes starting out.
Oh, now that's so rewarding, huh?
Oh my gosh, I haven't had time for a garden and haven't planted a garden since I was little and stuff. My father always has this huge garden, but you know, my grandfather's had gardens, and they would take me out and do that. But I have my own little flower pot garden going on here, and everything is just thriving with all the rain and everything. And so when I got back, and these tomatoes are picked out, and here we are. I was excited. I'm looking at tomato basil soup recipes and all kinds of things that call for tomatoes and all the other things I have growing. So things are going well. I didn't have any particular issue to talk about, just that I enjoyed the retreat. And
good.
I
want to talk about something, and that is what you just indicated. Again, and to just tie those two things together, that karmic conditioning wants us to have this big, complex thing that's going to achieve some level of perfection now and forever. And in fact, life happens moment by moment by moment by moment.
Exactly.
Karmic conditioning would say, you know, if you're going to garden, if you're going to do something for the environment, then you've got to buy a farm somewhere, and you've got to, but actually, you can just get some pots, and you can put them on your patio, and you can start growing stuff.
Yeah, and they grow, and it's just right outside my door. It is wonderful.
Yes. Yeah,
it is so much fun. And so simple. I mean, it didn't take much. And so I'm excited.
Little step, little step, little step, little step. And life just opens up in front of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Glad to hear from you. Glad you're doing well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Sherry.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, I just feel so lucky with this practice. I just feel like I'm being given to all the time. It's just amazing.
It is. So good.
Yep, so good.
Yeah, so good.
A debt that I will never repay, but I will pay as much interest on that loan as I can.
That's right. And yes, that's a great reminder, Michael. You know, it's true. It's a debt we will never be able to repay, but by golly, we can have fun doing the best we can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
All right. See if we can get the rest of our North Carolina retreat on this show tonight.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. My name is Melody, and I'm from California.
Well, howdy, Melody. How are you?
I am doing really well. I had no intention of getting on tonight. This is fantastic.
So you just were there, and all of a sudden you heard you're unmuted.
I did, and it's even better than that, because I wasn't planning on calling. It just, life turned out this way for me to call tonight. I have nothing to talk about, and it's my first time.
See there?
I am.
I am there.
Can you?
We are guided, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes, we are in life's capable hands.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about Melody.
Well, I've been actually wanting to call because I've been practicing for about 2 years, but nobody in practice knows that I've been practicing.
Aha. You're one of those people Jen referred to, right? People
yes.
who are out there and they're practicing and we have no idea they're doing that. This
exactly.
is good.
Mm-hmm, that's me. And practice has transformed my life. So I wanted the first time I called to have nothing, just to say thank you to you, to me for doing the work without any pressure to have a problem or have a great deep insight to share.
We can just be grateful, can't we?
Yes, I love mm-hmm. being grateful.
And so let me ask you this. Are you ever going to come out of hiding so that we can meet you, or is this going to be a voice, a disembodied voice on the radio?
No,
I
do fully intend to come out of practice or come out of hiding and into the Sangha.
Good.
Actually heard you say something I've listened to the archive several times. And I heard you say something on an archive podcast about, I'm not going to get it right, but I think I'll get it close. Something about how life is too big for any to be revealed to any one of us, and it takes all of us.
Yes.
And when I heard that, I thought that really resonated with my heart, and I felt like I needed to step up because I want to participate in Sangha by allowing life to be revealed through me to support everyone else.
You know, that is such an outrageously powerful insight to have, to realize that it's not, in fact, I was just talking with some folks about relationships, and I was opining that very often when people approach relationships, it's with the idea that I'm going to get something. Now, I want a relationship because of what I'm going to get out of it. We hardly ever hear people say, you know, I want to be involved in this relationship because there's so much I want to give. And that's just the orientation that most of us were, came in with. And to realize that it's not what you're going to receive from practice, it's what you're going to be able to offer practice. That's what we're really here for. That's huge. Yeah.
Yes, it feels huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes all the difference. It's belonging. It's belonging. I guess that's the best piece of that. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have your place, and only you can fulfill that. And without you, then we all suffer the loss of that, whether we know it or not.
Right, and I hope other people who are out in the dark places hiding and haven't come into Sangha and haven't called in will do so too. Because I hope to see what life reveals to them.
Yes, exactly. And so perhaps this will be their inspiration for punching in those numbers and joining. And again, no pressure. Right, we don't want to turn it into something that people should do. You know, you don't have to practice in any particular way. But that, I just want to underline what you already know, which is how important that insight is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll see you when we see you, and in the meantime, I hope we get to talk again.
Yes, I will call back.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Melody. So fun to hear a new voice, Sherry.
I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that idea, you know, I mean, there are lots of people who, if people listen to the show regularly or they listen to the archives, you know, you hear the same people, you know, with some regularity, which is wonderful because you hear people over a period of time, kind of get to know them and their progress, and it feels very manga to have a sense of how people are growing and changing and what's happening in their minds. And then it's so fun when there's a new voice, and then that new voice becomes one that you hear periodically. And it's kind of like going to retreats, different retreats, and they're always different people in the retreat. And we get a sense of who Sangha actually is and how big Sangha is and what a marvelous group of people we're a part of.
And it's such a huge support for me to know that all Sangha out there is doing that work. Because otherwise, with the information that normally comes in from the world, it gets pretty hopeless and despairing pretty quick.
We're in deep trouble. It's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, now, some people think this is a good idea, some people think it's a bad idea, but I endeavor to stay as much out of tune with what's happening as is humanly possible, because pretty much what's happening is a repeat of what's always been happening. In fact, I'm reading a book now that's a biography of Abraham Lincoln, and it's so fascinating to listen to read what's going on there and to realize that it's exactly what I would be listening to if I turned on a television or a radio. It's the same. I mean, the names are different, and the content is only slightly different. But just people duking it out over, you know, and hating each other and wanting to kill each other. And I just like to stay with practice because then the world that I live in is actually an extraordinary world. And as we were talking about, with Rochelle, you know, at the monastery, we've got all these sustainability projects going. We have relationships with the folks over in Cantalomba that we are working with, and it's not like, you know, we're isolated somewhere and trying to create our own little utopia. It's just that the energy is focused on the difference that we want for the world, and I'm quite happy with that. So yeah, I love to hear from Sangha and what people are up to and what they're doing and what they're seeing and the insights and letting go of suffering and the way to live.
It is. I'm with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Well, hello, Hi. Janet.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. There seems to be a little theme here tonight, being guided. Being guided by life. I mean, oh. I had no intention to be calling tonight, and I turned on my computer to listen, and I saw that there were only a few callers who called in, and something that I'm practicing is listening to life telling me what to do instead of conditioning. And of course, the message was, this is a great opportunity, call in. You know, and I love the other caller saying, you know, the telephone's kind of over there beyond the arm's reach. But since this is what I'm practicing, you know, I got up and went and got the phone and called. And I love that. It's so, I haven't been able to call in on Thursday nights because I've been teaching a class, but I've been listening to all the calls, and I've been so inspired, and so that's what I've been practicing. When I hear something, I'm going with it instead of hearing it and then having conditioning come in and start talking about it to me. And the next thing I know, I'm not doing what it was that I was guided to do.
And that's kind of a formula, isn't it? So something drops in, and then the conversation starts. Well, I don't know. Do you think you? What about?
I don't think so.
I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think. It's
not really what you wanted.
Right, it's the voice of resistance, isn't it? There it is.
Always
behind, one step behind, and always arguing against what life has just offered.
Yes, and having this be what I'm practicing, I don't go there, you know. I mean, sometimes I will, because it's such a repetitive, you know, it's
right.
So ingrained in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But
deep habit.
I'm trying not to, and it's been really, really fun, because I'll be like, well, I have no idea where this is going to lead to.
Uh-huh.
You know, and calling in, it was like, well, I really don't have anything to talk about. Call
uh-huh.
in. You know, I mean, it's the usual call in anyway, but there's a different twist to it now, because now it's like I'm really aware of what I'm hearing from life as opposed to what I'm hearing from conditioning.
Yes.
It seems like it's getting wider. The gap is getting wider.
Right. It's not just the four beats. Now it's like there's the information that comes in, which usually comes in kind of upbeat, doesn't it?
It comes in, there's like not a problem.
Right. And then whatever period of time later is the voice of gloom and doom. Even if it's presenting itself as just the voice of reason or you know, that the voice of reason, that, you know, doesn't want you to just go off the rails here somewhere. Let's think this over. Let's look at this a little bit more. And you just feel your energy.
Completely the voice of reason.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And, of course, it tells me that reason is very important. It's important to listen to the voice of reason.
Says the voice of reason.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, as soon as we get that the voice of reason is what the voice of conditioning calls itself, then we're on to a whole different thing. Because it's not, it's not reason. It's not reason at all. There's nothing reasonable about it.
Well, right. Just, like, what is the reason?
It's just a bunch of made up stuff. That again, back to this book. I had this thing the other day that if a person ever wonders about how really useless opinions are, read history. Because it's just such a history of incorrect opinions, self-serving, incorrect ideas that people believe and put out as truth. And and that's what it's doing all the time. And so the reasonable thing is karmic conditioning. And so we need to look at things in that. What to me is primarily negative approach to life. What won't work? What's wrong? What's missing? How it's going to mess up? How you're going to fail? How? And that's looking at it reasonably.
Yeah, I had a great demonstration of that today. That which was just really fun. My dogs love to swim in the lakes here. Well, one dog does, one doesn't, and you know it's in New Hampshire, and it's only May 20th, or maybe it's the 21st. And so the voice of reason says, it's not very warm yet. And when yesterday I was with my dog swimming, I thought, God, it'd be really fun to swim. So today I brought my bathing suit, and I went swimming. And the voice of reason was like, what are you doing? It's May 20th. You can't go swimming. You know, I was like, oh no, but I'm not listening to that.
It was
so much fun.
That's such a perfect example.
Nobody got hurt.
Right. Yeah. And what if you got cold?
Yeah, exactly. I would have gotten cold. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, I was all prepared that I might have gotten cold, but it didn't matter because I was following that.
You wanted to go swimming.
Yeah, I was following life saying, hey, that'd be a great idea. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wanted to report in that I'm really enjoying doing this, and sometimes it's a little scary, and I'm doing it anyway.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we have a lifetime of being talked out of what we want to do. So at a certain point, let's just risk doing what it is that we want to do. And what we want to do, of course, what I'm calling what we want to do, is what drops in from life in exactly that way. You know, it's beautiful.
Yes.
I think I'd like to go swimming. Okay, I'm going to go swimming.
Yeah.
I'm just going to risk disaster and go swimming on May 20th. Yeah. And so it's not, you know, the do what we want to do. It's not robbing liquor stores. The kinds of things that we get talked out of, there's just no reason not to do them. They're just fine, perfectly fine things that contribute to our happiness and well-being. And we're talked out of them as if it's, you know, there's some great calamity just right around the corner if we're not listening to this, no, you can't, no, you can't, no, you can't, no, you better not, you shouldn't. Awful things are going to happen to you. So,
God.
Because again, to me, the only awful thing that can happen to us as human beings, the most awful thing that can happen to us is living with that voice as our guide. That's an awful thing that can happen. So, you know, that idea that it's going to keep me safe, that I'll live longer, that whatever, it's, you know, I'll have enough money when I'm old to continue to live a miserable life for as long as the body will sustain them. No.
You know, Sherry, that's just what I'm so thankful for with this practice, is that to be seeing that, mm-hmm. you know, and to be reminded of that over and over and over again when I'm bamboozled and whatever, to keep coming back to that, because, you know, the more I practice, the more I totally get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is the worst thing to be happening to me.
Yeah, to be locked into that prison of lack of possibility.
Yeah,
the prison of the illusion of predictability.
Yeah, the illusion of predictability. I love that.
Mhm.
Yeah. Yeah, such an illusion. Love it.
Yep. All right. Well,
so
glad
thank you.
From
it's fun to call in.
Yes, indeed.
I'll see you soon.
Oh, good.
I'll be out on the west.
Where am I going to see you soon?
I'm going to be at the monastery in
less
than a month.
Fabulous. Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. Wonderful. Wonderful. I look forward to it.
Okay, right. I do too. Thank
Take
you.
Good night.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Uh-oh.
Next caller, are you there?
Oh, come on.
Oh, I think it's, oh my God, I'm shocked. This is Ann calling from the Bay Area.
Oh, there she is.
I'm like with Janet. I'm like, I didn't expect to get on. I just life told me to call in, so I'm like listening, going, oh, this is a great show.
And now you're a part of the great show. What's going on?
Well, life. I mean, I just loved what that person said about participating. You know, we've got to participate. Huh. So here I am participating. I'm just so shocked that I'm on this show. Anyway, I just love the show. I love practice. And what else can I say? I just listen to Open Air religiously, but I hardly ever get on. So here I am getting on.
Well, good. Anything going on in practice that you want to let
us
know about?
Well, I just recently had an experience where I think it was Janet who was just talking about this, of just being open to life's guidance and letting, not listening to the disclaimer come in afterwards, but sticking with the original impulse. And it just feels so great, because the stuff that comes in afterwards would make it very difficult and problematic, or actually that comes in before as well.
Yes. Yeah, so there's an impulse, and then the conversation starts, and you if it sounds like, you go ahead and do it anyway, and then the stuff wants to come in after, and as Janet was indicating, more and more you can see the distance, the difference between the two. You can watch each of those two processes. And, you know, and with the to me, the beauty of the learning to love learning thing that we're doing is that. Now, of course, a lot of people in practice right now are learning to love learning to be open in that way. You know, just, and so I have an impulse to X, and, you know, I look around and nobody's going to die. It's not harmful. It doesn't even cost any money, for heaven's sake. So, you know, I'm going to do it. And I'm just going to see what happens. And, of course, again, you know, I don't have to do that too many times before I realize that's way more fun than not just seeing what happens in life.
Well, yes, and here's what I have doped out, that conditioning wants to make everything huge and big. You know, it either has to be something huge you're going to do, i.e., problematic, or i.e., you know, something you can't do, or, you know, all of those things it's going to make. And what makes the difference is small steps regularly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
and like the pots of tomatoes on the patio.
Yes. Yes, because what conditioning comes in and says is that's not enough.
Right.
Right? What's a pot on the patio going to do? Or, well, I just recently had this experience where I was thinking about practice and we called it, I don't know whether this phrase is still used, but the toothbrush method of practice, who cares if you feel like sitting? You sit. Who cares if you feel
right.
like brushing your teeth? You brush your teeth because they need to be brushed. So I have a regular yoga practice too, and more often than not, I do not want to go to my yoga class because I'm exhausted and I would rather go to bed. And I go anyway. And I am always so grateful that I go. In other words, the decision isn't based on how I feel. It's based on a commitment I've made, and I'm always grateful that I stick with the commitment.
Yes, exactly. So, in the new book, one of my favorite little pictures is getting over how I feel. With guys jumping over the hurdle called how I feel. and that's the thing. It doesn't matter how I feel because that's what's going on. It's not how the intelligence animating this physical form feels. That's not it. Because if that were the case, then I would know, I need to miss the class tonight and rest. And that would be the right thing to do. That would be the from life, intelligent, take care of yourself thing to do. But what's going on most of the time is ego wants to be in control. And one of the quick ways to be in control is to get the person not to keep their commitment. Because then what's being set up is the person is being trained to look to ego identity for decisions. And the fastest way to get people to do that is to convince them that they feel a particular way that means something.
Yes, and what I just saw in terms of, ego saying, oh, you can't do, that's not enough. It compares the things of, you need to do something big and that's not enough. It, as always, it reverses the thing. So committing to something and then not doing it, it's huge. But ego would say, oh, it's no big deal.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just your whole well-being that's at stake, right? Because if
yes.
you are a person who can trust yourself to come through for yourself, to do what takes care of you, to choose your heart, to go with life, then that's one thing. But if you are a person who listens to a voice of ego identity say, I don't want to, you don't feel like it, you're really tired, what difference does
mm-hmm.
it make? It's back to the melody mm-hmm. thing, they won't notice if you're not there. Nobody cares if you miss sitting. Nobody's going to notice if you don't go to yoga. If that's who you are, then you're signing up for a life of misery. And, of course,
yes.
if people fall for it because it's presented, it sounds like it takes care of me. I'm exhausted. I don't want to go to yoga class. I just want to go home and go to bed. Now, doesn't that sound like somebody who cares about you? Except that you have done it often enough to notice that what takes care of you is to drag your exhausted little self to that class where you're going to be energized as a result
yes.
of it. And you're going to feel good about the fact that you came through for yourself one more time in spite of what karmic conditioning was telling you.
Yes, and the amazing thing is in practice, in awareness practice and in yoga practice for me is when I make that choice over and over and over again, I am dumbfounded at the effect it has on me. I'm like,
yeah.
wow. Like in yoga, it's, oh my gosh, I can stay up in a headstand for 10 minutes. I never thought I could do that. And it's not like I went from nothing to 10 minutes. It's I went from, okay, I'm gonna stay up for
10
one
seconds.
Rest more. Yes.
Yeah.
I went from 10 seconds to 11 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's and with sitting, it's like, like Janet said, there's a little bit more of a space between the impulse and the talking out of and I can live in that space a little bit more. It's like, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah.
But the way it happens is I say yes to the commitment rather than I'd rather not.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Then looking to how I feel I must learn to look to how I am,
mm-hmm.
not to how I feel. Yeah. So it's what
how
is,
I am. Can you
yeah.
say a little bit more about look to how
well,
I am?
The authentic being, the commitment that I have to the intelligence that animates. So mm-hmm. it's that looking to the wisdom, love, and compassion that is the authentic nature of a human being. Looking to that. So tomorrow morning, when I wake up and look in the mirror, who do I want to see looking back at me? You know, I want to see somebody who keeps a commitment, who comes
yes.
from integrity, who chooses the human, who does mm-hmm. does the hard thing in the moment. That's who I am. That's who I want to be. That's what I choose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, just looking to how ego says I feel in the moment, it's just a waste of time and a life.
Mhm. Mhm. And I was just going to do a little commercial plug for the Resistance book because I was so happy when I got it in the mail and I got to read through it and I just had a big grin on my face and I thought of all these people I want to give it to, and it's just a great book. So that's my little commercial.
Well, good. Thank you. I think so too. I'm really, really pleased with it. And we've had some wonderful testimonials for the retreat as well. And in fact, you know, we have one on the East Coast, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, coming up in the fall. And I just spoke with Ashwini yesterday about finding a place in the Bay Area and scheduling one for this winter, because I know that there have been so many people in this area who weren't able to do the one that was held here at the monastery. So
myself included, I'd love to come.
I know.
I too am looking forward to seeing you soon at the monastery.
Very good. Me too.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. Well, that's fun, Sherry.
Yeah.
Another retreat here. That's great.
Don't you think that's a good idea?
I think that's an excellent idea.
I have my sights on Vallombrosa. You know, where
Vallombrosa.
We work for New Year's. There's a part of that center that would just be a perfect size for a resistance retreat. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm going to look into it. So more about that soon.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for being here.
It's great. It's a pleasure.
I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Okay, me too.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.